Hi, and welcome or welcome back to Sex, Scandals, and Shenanigans. My name is Adrian, and I'll be your host. This show discusses history's most notorious mistresses and lovers. I just wanted to give a brief update. A lot of issues have come up personally for me, and that's why I haven't been able to put out this episode, but I should be back on my feet and ready to go, so here we are. So let's get into it. Today's episode, we'll be focusing on Byzantine Empress Theodora, mistress, and definitely wife of Emperor Justinian I, from the 6th century AD. As usual, let's define what a mistress is and what my contextual definition of a mistress is. Per Cambridge University, a mistress is a woman who has a sexual relationship over a long period of time with a man who is not her husband. Here's my contextual definition. A mistress is a woman who has a sexual relationship with a man regardless of his married state. Actually, doesn't necessarily have to be a man. But anyway, let's move on. We now come from the western portion of the Roman Empire to the Eastern Roman Empire. To prevent any confusion, the Eastern Roman Empire will be known as the Byzantine Empire. Please note that this episode will discuss themes of sex, religion, and adultery. Listener discretion is advised. Additionally, let's discuss this episode's characters. Of course, our first character is Theodora. We also have Justinian, Justin, Belisarius, Procopius, John of Ephesus, Comito, Acacius, Anastasia, that's her younger sister, and then here we go with the religious figures. We have Patriarch Timothy III, Anastasius, Pope Simplicius, Agapetus I, Anastasius I, Virgilius, Pelagius, and Felix IV. Years will be forthcoming when I get to them. I should also mention regarding the popes, as they play a pivotal role, particularly Agapetus and Virgilius during Theodora's tenure as empress. I briefly mentioned Procopius. I should note that the works most associated with Justinian and Theodora, or at least their reign, is that of former soldier and statesman, and also contemporary gossip recorder, is Procopius. He wrote three major works, A Secret History, Architecture, and Wars. These works were completed, they were written and then completed during the reign of Justinian. It should be noted that Procopius has a very biased outlook regarding Justinian and particularly regarding Theodora. So take his writings and his musings with a mountain of salt. I would also like to make a side note, this man has opinion. Like, think of Hetty Hopper of the late antiquity kind of opinions. As usual, during this time, not much is known about Theodora's birth and young and early childhood. She is estimated to have been born from 490 to 500. Some sources claim that she may have been born Constantinople, so modern-day Istanbul, Turkey, and that she came from Greek descent. Michael the Syrian, who was an author from the 11th century, claims that she was from Maburg, Syria, in his works The Chronicle. Another source, Nicephorus Callistus Xanthopoulos, a Greek ecclesiastical historian, claims that Theodora was from Cyprus. Historian Clive Foss asserts that Theodora was from Alexandria, Egypt. So who the fuck knows where she's from? All I can surmise is that she's from the Eastern European area or Mediterranean area. Procopius describes her life prior to her marriage to Justinian, but there's not a lot of confidence in his coverage, some calling it unreliable and if not outright slanderous. Didn't stop him though, did it? Anyway, what is known was that her family were in the performing art. Her mother was a dancer and her father, Acacius, was an animal tamer and circus worker. Her life took a turn when her father died. Their family was part of the Green faction, and to quickly summarize, there were four factions. Blue, green, red, and white. Blue was attributed to the sky. Blue was attributed to the sky, sea, in autumn or fall. Green was Mother Earth in spring. Red was associated with Mars/Aries. And the whites were associated with Zephyrus, the god of the west wind. We've talked about him previously in the Zeus episode. Anyway, Theodora's family worked with the Green faction until her father died. The leader of the Green faction then gave her father's position away to another animal trainer. The Blue faction, with pity, allowed Theodora and her family to join them. In his work, The Secret History, Procopius recounts his interactions and thoughts on the relationship between Justinian, Belisarius, Theodora, and their impact on the empire. Again, this book has been described as hyperbolic, and I find that his opinions are extremely skewed and that he does not favor Justinian, let alone Theodora. Continue on the Procopius train. Procopius, before writing his opinions on Justinian and company, traveled as a soldier under the general Belisarius, who was a trusted advisor to Justinian during his time in the military and while on the imperial throne. Justinian was about 20 years older than Theodora, so while she was working at the Hippodrome, Justinian was called by his maternal uncle Justin, who was gaining a Roman education, military, philosophical, and ecclesiastical, to become Justinian's heir in around 527 AD. Brief background on Justinian. His mother was Vigilantia, whose brother was Justin and father Sabbaticus. His uncle rose in the ranks as the commander of the Imperial Guards, Exhibitors, or the Byzantine version of the Praetorian Guards. He then became emperor, then adopted his sister's son, Sabbaticus, as his heir. Once adopted and educated, Sabbaticus changed his name to reflect his respect for his uncle to Justinian. Justinian then joined the military and served with Belisarius during their campaign. Also, this is where Procopius enters the story. In his secret history, in chapter 9, Procopius recounts how Theodora wove her feminine wiles on Justinian. However, Procopius describes Theodora's life in the performing arts and her early history as a young girl who emulated her sister's action, Comedo, and then began her career as a courtesan. Continuing in chapter 9, Procopius describes Theodora as that when she came into her youth, not like a young child, but more like adolescence, teenage years, and she was now ready for the world, her mother put her on the stage, or put her on stage. Procopius keeps alluding to Theodora's favors generally went to the actors. She also partook on stage and performed in comedic plays and or stories. Procopius continues to state that she was very funny and a good mimic. Also, Theodora never turned down a role, even if it was a scandalous one. Side note, I fucking love Mel Brooks. Anyway, I just remembered a scene from Robin Hood Men in Tights. A toll is a toll, a roll is a roll. I don't get no roll if I don't get no toll. Money is money, regardless of where it came from. But who doesn't like Mel Brooks? I make this reference in that, you know, Procopius said that she wouldn't turn down a role even if it was a scandalous one. Like I said, money is money, and money makes the world go round. Procopius recounts that Theodora's time on the stage as a comedian was that of partaking in part who delights in the audience by letting herself be cuffed and slapped on the cheeks and makes them guffaw by raising her skirts to reveal the spectators those feminine secrets of hers and which custom veils the eyes of the opposite sex. Fuck me, he's a sanctimonious prick, and he shall forthwith be known as Prickly Procopius. Furthermore, he continues to describe how much of a harlot she is on the field of pleasure. She was never defeated. Often she would go picnicking with 10 young men or more in the flower of their strength and virility and dally with them all the whole night through. Ooh, there's a way to describe somebody. Okay, so Procopius is well aware of her traits, sex and entertainment. A girl slash lady needs to eat and function. Hashtag girl boss, hashtag, you know what, hashtag girl gon' get it on stage. Hashtag Prickly Procopius. By 522 AD, Theodora met Justinian. Yeah, I know I'm fast-forwarding here, but if it's going to be a longer episode, so let's just get through it. In 522, about 5 years prior to obtaining the imperial throne, Justinian was the only heir to his uncle Justin. Unfortunately, Justinian was unable to marry Theodora due to laws that were created during the reign of Constantine. Talk later didn't read. Constantine instituted a law that forbade nobles from marrying actresses. Guess who supported this law? Well, I mean, aside from Procopius, Empress Lupicina Euphemia, or Empress Euphemia. She had not supported Justinian's preference for the actress as an empress. I guess good things or action to those who wait will happen. In either 523 or 524 AD, she died. Justinian was able to convince his uncle Justin to remove the law forbidding marriages to actresses. In 524, Justinian and his mistress, Theodora, married. In 527 CE, Justin I died. Or Uncle Justin. Emperor Justin was 77. The guy was 77, as I just said. He was old and he died. So guess who came up next? Justinian. So, it happens Justinian took the regnal name of Imperator Caesar Flavius Petrus Sebastius Iustinius Augustus, a.k.a. Justinian. Here's where Theodora truly developed as a person of courage and interest. Being that Theodora was from a low or common background, issues that she took interest in or made it to the imperial agenda included rights of women and Christianity, notably non-Chalcedonian or versus Chalcedonian, and the Nika riots. Let's begin with women's rights. From Douglas A. Burton's site, he wrote an article/blog called Empress Theodora and the Origin of Women's Rights back in September of 2019. Burton writes, under Empress Theodora, rape was made punishable by death and the rapist's property was transferred to the rape victim. Codex Justinian, Book 9, Title 13. This also allowed a family's wealth to expand or could expand and flourish through a daughter, particularly should the husband die. The property then could be claimed legally by the widow. Theodora, as a woman who came from an actor's mime sex workers, wanted to provide a way for these workers to maintain their own income and keep it for themselves. However, brothels, at this time, kept the majority of the income earned by the sex workers, which this was then lifted by Theodora, essentially making it so that the brothel owners could not fundamentally abuse the sex workers. Theodora also found out that brothel owners were making sex workers take oaths to swear that they were not going to leave the brothel. This was then rendered illegal by Theodora. So this badass woman, because of course she is, asked the same fucking question all modern people ask about double standard. While Empress, her friend was to marry a nobleman. She did this type of arrangements for her daughter from another prior relationship. Senatonitis? Anyway, he bitched and complained about Theodora's friend, a former sex worker, not being a virgin when they married. So she asked, why would he visit bordellos and brothels and be a sex maniac, yet dare to demand his wife's virginity? Like, why? A fucking man, Theodora. I knew I liked her. Another step in the direction of progress, divorce was legalized insofar as both parties consented, not like future episode holder Henry VIII of England. However, the mutual consent did not always favor the wife, so this law too was removed by Theodora's influence. Remember how I said there was like three issues that were important to Theodora? Well, we're on number two. It's going to be a long one. Welcome to Christianity. Another aspect of Theodora's influence on Justinian was her devotion to Christianity. I'm not a religious historian. My preference in history, while discussing scandalous people, is rooted within the English-British royal family up until 1837. If you'd like more information, please visit other podcasts, Totalius Rankian, or Pontifex for further explanations. I'm only going to give you a very brief explanation. In 451, a council took place in Chalcedon. This council defined what Chalcedonian and non-Chalcedonian Christianity is. Chalcedonian, Jesus is one person, son of Mary and the Son of God, and is the one and the same. Jesus is/was perfect, and he is dual-natured, mortal yet divine. These beliefs are held in Orthodox churches like the Greek and Russian, and the Catholic Church. Non-Chalcedonian, Christ comes from one divine nature, and that's it. For more information, please visit Pontifex Podcast, episode 56. Bree does a very good job of explaining what Council of Chalcedon explores as far as the natures of Christ. Alright, we've got to do a little bit of rewinding here. So, when Theodora was around 16 years old, I don't know, between 506 and 516, again, date of birth is unconfirmed or unknown, she was in, according to the Brooklyn Museum, in Alexandria, Egypt, when she was introduced to Christianity. She adopted the Monophysite faction of Christianity, which believed that Jesus Christ had and was wholly divine in nature, not that he had the nature as mortal and divine, but just that single nature. Due to her conversion to Christianity, Brooklyn Museum states that it was at this point where she abandoned her career as an entertainer and potentially a courtesan/sex worker. I also do need to note that in 533, Justinian initiated his confession of faith. This is the belief that Jesus had consubstantial trinity of one substance in three hypostases, essentially saying that both Chalcedonian and non-Chalcedonian beliefs may be observed. This was accepted by Pope John II on March 25th, 534. After becoming empress in 527 CE, or AD, she stated she started on reforming Byzantium Constantinople. However, in 532 AD, a revolt broke out after a chariot race went horribly wrong. This is the third thing that she's also known to be associated with, the Nika riots. From how I understand the Nika riot, I'm going to do my best to describe it to you. If you have further questions, I'll also link down a source from the University of Chicago that does a much better explanation of what the Nika riot consisted of versus what I'm going to give you. Not that I'm saying I'm a bad person. I'm just saying I'm not the best. So in 532... Actually, of January 532, two men were arrested and an execution was to take place, but it did not go well. One man was from the Blues, the others from the Greens. Remember when I mentioned the four factions, the Blue, Greens, Reds, and Whites? That's what we're talking about, the Blues and the Greens at this point. Both factions pled for their mercy. However, Justinian then commuted the sentences but not pardoned the accused men. However, because Justinian did not accede to the faction's demands, the Blues and Greens teamed up in alliance and started chanting Nika, or victory in Greek, reference to the Greek goddess Victory, Nike, you know, just do it. Because the chants and the situation escalating, a rebellion broke out at the Hippodrome, lasting upwards for 5 days in January of 532. According to the University of Chicago, it started on January 13th, 532 AD. To quell the rebellion, Justinian called his main military advisors, Belisarius and Mundus, took their military units in from different entrances to the Hippodrome to keep the peace and end the revolt that ended up turning into a rebellion. At this point, it was possible that Justinian may have lost his imperial power to the nephew of a previous emperor, Anastasius. His nephew, Hypatius, though initially reluctant to take the imperial diadem as a power investor, he did it anyway. Due to this action, once the rebellion was quashed, Hypatius, like the other 30,000 victims, lost his head. But since we're discussing Theodora's story, guess who came to save the day and the imperial throne? Yep, that badass, Theodora. She scolded her husband by saying, "Royal purple makes a fine burial shroud." Procopius relates her speech to Justinian and the Senate. Of course, our prickly friend Procopius was not a fan of a woman addressing the Senate on such a topic as the Nika revolt / rebellion. Procopius recounts Theodora's speech to the Senate and Justinian. Her words to Justinian and the Senate as to whether it is unseemly for a woman to be bold among men or to be daring when others are full of fear, I do not think that the present crisis allows us to consider the matter. I would consider that now of all times, flight would be bad. May I never be parted from this purple. I agree with the old saying, royalty is a good winding sheet. This quote comes to us from Procopius from his other book / writings, Wars. As we've discussed, Procopius was not a follower of Theodora, let alone someone who held her in any type of good esteem. He loathed the fact that she was a common entertainer who became an empress and then shoved her way into the political game, where she, as he has indicated multiple times, is not wanted or needed at any point for any legal or social reforms. In this upcoming article, published in 1993 from the University of Alabama in Huntsville, Susan E. Dill's Understanding Theodora, The Role of the Empress in 6th Century Imperial Religious Policy, writes that Procopius portrays Theodora as a menace and her apology to the Senate for making her presence known was a disastrous move. But after the rebellion was put down, both Justinian and Theodora instituted and initiated many reforms. According to Dills, the government was simplified and selling offices was abolished. Oh, so simony was still allowed. Lovely. So from all these incidents and all these reforms, we can certainly see how influential she was during her husband's reign, particularly regarding religious policies and social reforms. Guess who didn't like this? I know I'm beating a dead tree or dead horse here, but it still has to be said. Yeah, you guessed it, prickly Procopius. Theodora had other strong influences over Justinian aside from religion and social reforms. This includes architecture. They, as a team, created new building projects for Constantinople, including the rebuilding of the magnificent Hagia Sophia. After the disastrous Nika riots, Justinian and Theodora planned on the rebuilding of the Hagia Sophia, which had been initially consecrated as church grounds back in the 300s. To complete this building project, Justinian hired or had appointed two architects, a mathematician and an engineer, to replace the original structure from the mid to late 4th century, again, Constantius II. From 532 to 537 AD, the Hagia Sophia was being constructed by the appointed men of Justinian. It has been known for its grandeur, particularly in its Byzantine architectural style, and known for its many religious changes, depending on who or which political entity was in control. Here's a brief account of its controllers. From 360 to 1204 and from 1261 to 1453, it was under the jurisdiction of the Eastern Orthodox Church. From 1204 to 1261, it was a Catholic church. From 1453 to 1934, the Sunni Muslims controlled and turned it in from a church to a Sunni Muslim mosque. From 1934 to 2020, it was a museum. And as of 2020, because you know the pandemic started then, to currently, it is now again a Sunni Muslim mosque. See, it changed a lot of hands there. Another side note, Empress Theodora and her devotion to the church, well, the Eastern Orthodox Church, she was made and created a venerated saint. Fortunately, Theodora was able to see one of the greatest architectural projects created and started and completed in her lifetime, the Hagia Sophia. However, by 548, Theodora died. According to Victor of Tenora, a bishop in the North African town, was the one who's credibly sourced Theodora's death. Victor records her death to be on the 28th of June, 548. However, because her birth was not recorded, you know, like that of any man or her husband Justinian, of course, so we don't know when or what her true age was. She has been recorded dying at the age of 48, 51, or possibly 53. What is known is that Theodora is buried at the Church of the Holy Apostles in Constantinople. Justinian, devoted to his mistress turned wife and empress, never remarried. He died on the 14th of 565, buried next to Theodora at the Church of the Holy Apostles. Now we close our episode on the amazing, badass Empress Theodora. For a woman of low common birth to ascend to the imperial ranks as empress, Theodora was a tour de force during the late antiquity period. And not only that, but they actually had a very happy marriage, which is not going to be common in this show. There may be a few others, but not many. Above all, she is, or and was, our definition at this beginning of this episode, a mistress. That's how she started. But, unlike I said, a lot of other mistresses, she became the empress. She became the woman who did so many things for women, children, girls, sex workers, farmers. People who believed in the Monophysite or the Non-Chalcedonian believed that Jesus had one divine nature versus having the dual nature like that of the Catholic Church. She did a lot for the people of Byzantium or the Eastern Roman Empire. She was a performer, a devoted follower of Christ, well, and a social reformer. Thank you for joining me on today's episode. She took a long time to research. Plus, I had many personal issues that I spoke about earlier, so I apologize about the tardiness of this episode. In any case, if you wish to reach out to the show, you can reach out via email, sexscandalsshenaniganspod@gmail.com. One more thing. I do want to briefly mention two podcasts that I actually mentioned probably earlier, which are Totalius Rankium and Pontifax. Thank you to Bree for responding back to me. Your episode, Council of Chalcedon, is extremely helpful. So thank you. You're well aware I write, edit, and do everything for this podcast. So please stay tuned for the next episode. And that's going to be on the Theophylacti family. So I'm looking forward to working on Marozia. Because, that woman just oozes out scandal. Anyway, again, you can reach me via email, sexscandalshenaniganspod@gmail.com. And until then, try not to get into any shenanigans yourself, as I just may end up telling your story. Thanks and bye!